You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Heyo, welcome back to the UCB Long-Form Conversation Podcast from New York City. I'm Don Finelli. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I get to be the host. That's how this works. Yeah. My guest today is the lovely Carrie McCrossin.
Hey.
You guys might know her from a bunch of things. You're on Women and Men right now. That's a Harold team.
Mm-hmm.
Current Harold team at UCB Theater in Chelsea. You're also on a Maud team.
Sort of.
Was your Maud team, and now is that kind of, you're doing a show? You're currently doing a bi-monthly show?
We're doing a bi-monthly show. We don't really know what we are. I think we're a post-Maud team.
Very cool.
That's what I've been telling people. Awesome. It means nothing to anyone, but.
It's a post-Maud team.
Yeah, we have a bi-monthly show.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And you're an actor?
Yeah.
On that team?
Yes, I am.
That's very great. And you've been, when did you get onto, your first team was Huxtable, right?
Yeah, you coached
us. I was coaching you guys,
Yeah.
I remember when you joined the team. When was that? Is that 2000?
I think that was 2013, 12. I think it was the end of 2012, maybe end of September, October.
Right. Yeah, and you were on Huxtable for a little bit, then Huxtable got broken up. And then
I was on Huxtable for about five or six months, and then I was pulled up to Good Girl.
Good Girl,
And Huxtable remained after me.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So you were on Good Girl, was a very well-known team. You guys were a Harold team for a while, right?
Yeah, Good Girl predates me by a year, and then I was on it for... Was I on it for 2 years?
I don't know. I feel like Good Girl was around for 2 years at least.
I think I might have been on it for over a year for sure. Yeah. I'm very bad with dates, so I couldn't tell you exactly.
Yeah.
But also Good Girl lives forever in all of our hearts. So it's hard to tell like when the end date would even be.
Yeah, Good Girl was one of those teams from my recollection that just one was like also very close.
Yeah.
And like would travel socially close.
Yeah. We're still planning a trip this year.
Yeah, you guys would like go on like retreats together and stuff like that and like film stuff and do all sorts of fun stuff, right? Bonfires and shit.
Yes. Oh, you know all the lore.
Yeah, I got the lowdown.
Yeah, the fires and the whatnot. Yeah. Well, it was daunting to be asked to join. I mean, it's scary to be on Harold Night when you first are moved up.
Why is that? Just because it's something you want and...
Yeah, you want it for so long and then you're moved up. And
yeah, you don't want to fuck up.
Yeah, and you're on a team that like one already has their social dynamic like totally in place.
That's very interesting.
Loves each other.
Mm-hmm.
And also a lot of veterans and people who had been on, you know, Noah, Bluv, they'd been on Harold for a really long time.
It's Noah Foreman and David Bluv Band.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the whole team. Everybody was like pro.
Mm-hmm.
To join that team was very scary. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'll be able to get into the social circle of the team. And I felt like it happened immediately. And it was really easy to play with everybody. And I loved it.
That's awesome.
I was very lucky. I've been very lucky. Because Huxtable was also a team that really enjoyed each other.
Yeah. Just great people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nate and I were talking last episode about how good the opera was socially, and then when we get to the stage, it was tough to kind of have that same dynamic happen. But I felt like Good Girl did that. I felt like your chemistry was really great on stage as well as off stage. I don't think a lot of teams can do that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Why do you think that is? Was it just a level of trust, or
I honestly don't know.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it was a mixed bag in terms of different types of players. So maybe that.
That always helps.
I mean, when I think about how we're all friends, I'm like, wow, we're a whole bunch of weirdos.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still, you know, for whatever reason, it all works.
Yeah.
So that could be, I think generally it's a good idea to have a team where there's a bunch of different voices, right?
Yeah.
If you get too matchy-matchy, mm-hmm. then it can become stagnant maybe or...
Sure. Yeah, there's definitely different personalities that all kind of gelled together on that team.
Yeah.
Cool. And so you went right from that to Women and Men.
Yeah.
And Women and Men's been around for a while now, too.
Yeah, we've now been... we're coming up on 2 years, and I don't know whenever we made April or May.
Right. You've had some turnover, right?
A couple.
But not that much.
Not that much, yeah. No. We lost Josh Sharp. He mm-hmm. stepped down. We got Tice.
Uh-huh.
And then Cassia, R.I.P.,
uh-huh.
moved to L.A.
She's
in
not
September.
Dead. Yeah. Yeah, you got to say move to L.A. first
to
before R.I.P.
She's doing very well. And, you know, I miss both of those guys.
Sure.
But, again, really lucky. I have been so, you would think, I mean, I don't know. I just, the teams that I've been on have been so healthy and fun.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, it's, you came from a more of a theater background, right? You went to Fordham, right?
Mm-hmm.
For theater. And then you did you do regional theater for a while before you got into UCB, or were you doing UCB and theater as well at the same time?
I was getting rejected from theater a lot.
Okay.
So I started.
This is plays or musicals?
All right. Well, so my bio is that I did a lot of music mm-hmm. in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I,
great voice. You have a very good voice.
Thank you.
I've heard you sing.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
the podcast listeners will just have to take your word for it, because I'm not going to sing today. So I did a lot of music coming up in like high school and stuff like that. I wanted to do musical theater. I got into a couple programs, but mm-hmm. Fordham gave me a really good scholarship.
Awesome.
So I ended up going there, and they didn't have a musical theater program. They just had theater. And I think that was like huge. That has put me on a totally different path.
Right.
Studying like, you know, experimental theater and uh-huh. acting, and a lot more ensemble-based stuff, which I think helped sort of put me on the path and translated into doing long form. Because it's an ensemble art. And I don't think I was ever thinking about acting in that way before Fordham. I was always like, oh, what is my performance? What is my, the finished product? What is it going to look like?
Right.
And do I look like Broadway? Do I sound like Broadway? That kind of stuff. And then going to a program where it was like, wanted you to be messy, wanted you to really blend into an ensemble or do, you know, some of that kind of stuff.
So it's good that you had both.
I loved that training.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you do any improv at that? No.
Was there improv involved
no.
in any of that stuff? I would think there would be, but not necessarily.
Well, there was in that we started – that was the first time I ever started developing material for myself.
Okay.
And I guess I don't really remember doing – but I'm sure we did improv in terms of like when we were working on a scene, we probably improvised loosely, you know, if we were not off book, loosely improvised lines or something like that. But I don't remember any like formal improv exercises out of that.
Right.
Except maybe in movement. We might have done some like improvised movement here and there.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't like when I came to UCB, I had no improv knowledge. I had not done it in college. I think Fordham had a team. Wasn't Caroline Cotter doing it in college?
I think Fordham definitely did have a team.
Different campus, though.
Okay.
There's like a Bronx campus. Lincoln Center.
You were in the... an old improviser that I used to hang with when I was living in the city, James Rebeletta. He was like an RA there, and I would
sleep
over there sometimes with him. Yeah.
Was he in Lincoln Center?
Yeah, he was in Lincoln Center.
Oh, aren't those the sweetest dorms?
They're awesome.
Oh, that's where I
was like, what is this?
I cooked in the kitchen.
Yeah.
When I was in college. It was great.
Kitchen here. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
That whole area's awesome.
Yeah, it was really great.
Why UCB? Did you see a show there, or did someone else?
Oh, okay. So I was getting rejected from theater, like a lot.
So you're going on auditions for?
Yeah, I was non-equity.
Okay.
So for listeners, that means I was non-union, and how that works is for anyone who has never done this. Did you ever do this process?
No.
Okay. So you would go to they were called equity principal auditions. They still go on. You'd go, and they would give appointments to anyone in the union. So equity people, union people would come in, and they would get an appointment time. And if you were non-union, you'd wait out in the hallway with no access to like the bathroom or the waiting area or whatever. You're just like waiting in the hallway for there to be a slot open. So if like a union person didn't show up, they might be able to squeeze you in. So you'd get there to sign up at maybe 8 a.m. Maybe before then, 7:30. You would wait, and frequently what would happen is they would say, like, we think we can get you in the next group. We think we can get you in the next group. And then you'd be there until, like, 5:30.
Oh, my God.
And I can't tell you how many days went by when I just wouldn't get seen at all.
Yeah.
And then other days when I would get seen, but, like, when you're seen at 4 o'clock and you've been up for, like, you know, however long because you got up to be, like, you know, ready at 7:30
right.
or whatever.
Right.
And then you're like singing classical soprano and your voice isn't warmed up and you yeah. haven't had access to the bathroom. It just was, I was set up, I felt like I was never going to win in that
yeah,
scenario.
That's tough.
And I did that for a while and it just was starting to feel like a waste of time. And mm-hmm. I was like, I have to.
It's like a double check because like you need to book one of those things to get into the union, right?
Yes.
Is that yeah. is it kind of like, does everyone go through that process in a sense?
Yeah, or? I think so. I think there are things that probably could have given me an advantage, and mm-hmm. I didn't have a network of people also doing it. People from my theater program in Fordham mm-hmm. were doing different projects. You know, they were doing different mm-hmm. things, and some of them went to grad school and other, you know. I didn't have a lot of other people who were trying to do, like, musical auditions. And
gotcha.
It sucked. It was hard.
So how'd you then hear about UCB?
So,
because you're in the city.
So I'm in the city. Well, that was the thing. I could have been involved in UCB so much sooner if I had just taken advantage of it. But I never thought of myself as funny, and I never thought of myself as being able to improvise.
Oh.
It just seemed like, oh, those people are too clever, and I would never be able to do that.
Yeah.
So I started after like rejection after rejection, I was like, I've got to think outside the box. I've got to try something else, something different. And I was doing other things. I was like taking different classes and that actually started to really help me. And then I did like get to do some theater and mm-hmm. it was better.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point I think I had a meeting with a commercial agent and I was like, if I have a commercial agent who will send me out and I take a class at UCB and I have an improv, you know, on my resume, that would be so great.
Mm-hmm.
So I met with this woman and she never sent me out ever. So that didn't end up happening. But I did tell her I was going to take a class at UCB and I followed through and I took it thinking it would make my acting better.
Mm.
And it did. I think it made my acting better.
And how did you hear about it? You just knew?
I don't know.
It was like
just,
on the resume.
Yeah, it was like
it's
ubiquitous.
Yeah.
It was a good thing to have on your resume. Yeah. And it wasn't solely like it wasn't like, oh, I just want to put it on my resume. It's
Oh,
I think it might also help me.
Right. Okay. So you came in with that attitude, not just like, this is just for this thing. And whatever.
But I didn't come in with the attitude of like, oh, I will be a comedian now.
Sure.
It was very, very gradual that I was sucked in. I just had so much fun. And
that was the same way with me, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I could, why don't I just keep, why don't I take another class? This could keep, you know, I could keep. And then I don't know when the turning point, there wasn't like a day that I remember turning.
Okay, yeah, that was my next question, like, was like, when did it, when, well, at least do you remember, like, was it after like 401, did you jump into like practice groups at this time? Were you,
I was late on all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
I was in, I sort of had a team in 201 that I like started to practice with and mm-hmm. like perform with.
Anybody still that you improvise with now?
Yeah, Eric Gerson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He was in your early classes.
He was... A girl that we were both in class with put together like mm-hmm. a little team and
cool.
we're still like very close friends and
that's awesome.
Know, in his show.
Yeah. 1770 something.
Yes.
Great show.
Wonderful show.
Yeah. Ran last year for a couple months or
no,
is that a year? 2 years
two?
Ago.
I think
oh,
that
man.
Was like 2 years ago.
Feels
I think.
Like it was last year. Yeah, it's 2 years ago.
But, yeah.
I just saw him the other day and we were talking about it. And
great.
I really love that show.
Yeah. And just like a really good friend. And we're still, you know, he put together Rumpel Teaser, which is now doing musical improv.
You're doing musical improv now.
UCB. Yeah. And I'm involved with that. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. Just still friends. So what?
So you didn't fly through.
No. I wasn't even one of those students who would like go to a ton of shows. Not until like maybe 401. I would see like my two show requirement.
Yeah.
It was very late. Yep. I was like, why are all these people up so late at night? I can't go see a show at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
But in my defense, I worked really early in the mornings back then.
Sure.
And I don't know. I think it was a combination of feeling like I saw a path for people who worked hard.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like people who worked really hard did get better
mm-hmm.
and did get opportunities to perform. Right. That felt like justice
right.
for once.
Right.
And then started making friends. The first like advanced study class that I had are people that I think and hope I will be friends with my whole life.
Oh, wow. So you met a bunch of folks in that class. That always helps. It always helps to like kind of start forming some sort of a little community within your community where there's like-minded people.
Yeah.
You start to like see that there's different people and people think differently and about things. It starts sparking your creative mind a little bit.
People that you can respect, mm-hmm. people that you feel like respect you, that see you as mm-hmm. an artist or as a comedian or whatever.
Right.
And you start to give opportunities to each other. You mm-hmm. start to like give a leg up to somebody. You know, you're making a dumb video and you put this friend in it, or they're making a video and they put you in it, or whatever. That starts.
You get your experience with them.
Yeah,
like you're all doing like the experience.
Yeah.
Level.
Yeah.
Where you're like, let's just try shit, and you trust each other and don't judge each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when you are rejected.
Mm-hmm.
They still think you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is it's a great built-in kind of system there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, I don't know. I liked that stuff and was drawn to that stuff.
So you're taking a bunch of advanced study classes. Did you audition a bunch? Audition once, twice?
No,
Did you get on your audition? Did you, were you put on, I think you were put on Huxtable later, or were you?
No, I was put on when that was formed.
When you were formed, right.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I auditioned a bunch. I auditioned for Maude a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Audition for Harold a bunch.
What's a bunch for Maude? Like three times?
And then I was never put on. I was put on mid-cycle. So I had three times of auditioning and not getting on.
So I think that's an important thing. It's just like a lot of people would get discouraged with that. Do you think like some of your – why did you keep doing it? Was it just like, oh, fuck it, I can be better? Or was it like I really, really, really want this and I'm going to keep – driving towards it? Did you put a lot of more pressure on yourself the second time, or did you take the pressure off? Do you know what I mean? Like some people go, you know what? I need to work harder. Some people need to be like, I worked too fucking hard. I got in my head about that shit.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you. I'll tell you the story of my Harold auditions.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. So when did you audition for that?
I wish I could remember a year.
No, it's okay.
I auditioned four times, mm-hmm. maybe three times, four mm-hmm. times. My first audition, I still think, was my best audition. My first audition, I was, like, fresh into advanced study. Yeah. I had no baggage.
Uh-huh.
I got a call back. Mm-hmm. Anthony King was the artistic director.
Uh-huh.
And my callback scene, I thought, went very well. Uh-huh. It had game.
All right.
I still think it had game. I didn't get on a team back then. I'm sort of glad that I didn't get on a team. I don't think I would have really been ready.
Uh-huh.
But I think that was my best audition.
Yeah.
Then I had like an invite audition where I wasn't good. And then uh-huh. I had this.
Why weren't you good? Were you in your head, or were it just like didn't
wasn't
click?
Good.
Just like that.
Maybe,
day?
I'm sure I was in my head. Sure, I was mortified for all of these. I got more nervous than any stage production or whatever that I'd ever done.
Yeah. Any other audition, this is the most nervous you've
ever
worked.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yes. Cold sweats.
Is it because you think it's more tangible and then sometimes when you're out? No.
No, it's not that.
Okay.
You don't have a net. You don't have a script. You don't.
Yeah, you really don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know why the nerves were so much worse.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was like I can really get sometimes when
I felt
you audition.
Less competent.
Okay.
I guess I felt more like with acting, I felt at least like
trained. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have, this is, you know, whatever.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I think I felt, I don't know. I don't know.
Huh.
I still get nervous improvising. At any rate, I auditioned a few times. And then I think it was either, must have been the third or, mm-hmm. Third time. I auditioned as a team with a group of people who were so great that they invited us to come straight to the callback round. So we did a Harold. And everyone on the team got placed except for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it crushed me because,
because
they were all friends. So there was, on top of it just being like, oh, can I deal with the rejection? Probably yes. But also, like, they're all friends. And now I'm waiting in the standby line to see them. And it was hard. I had to swallow my pride a little bit. But but luckily for me, around that same time, I did a regional show. I got to leave for a month. I got out of the city, and I got to be good at something. I got to like go and like.
It's a perfect time for that to happen.
It was really wonderful
because you get that happens. that, you know, that's a really tough thing to deal with. And then it's just like there's still work. You know what I mean?
And you get to get up on stage, be in front of an audience. Right.
Get away from it, too.
Yeah, and that's not a little more perspective.
Yeah.
But it was the whole time it was like the friendships of the people. I knew that I wasn't going to like walk away from improv forever. I never said that. I was never like, I'll never do this. Because the reason that I did it wasn't just to get on a Herald team. It was because I actually loved improvising.
Right.
So I wasn't like, no bitterness was going to make me stop improvising.
Right.
I just sort of was trying to make peace with the fact that maybe I'll never get on a house team. And I came back from doing that show, and I did. I do think something was lifted. I was like, oh, you know, fuck it. And mm-hmm. I think I did better improv as a result. So I guess maybe I was in my head, or I was nervous, or I was trying to control, probably.
That's a good, it really is. And when you, I always think it's interesting, it's like, they always say, like, you got to live your life, and life, you have to bring your life into improv.
Yeah.
And I'm always one to be like, yeah, I'm also good with immersing myself in it to learn.
Yeah.
But there is a point where you do need to walk away a little bit. One, to figure out what you actually love about it.
And
what you have to get away from it to, you're going to miss. If you really miss it, then you really loved it.
Yeah.
If you don't really miss it, then maybe it was just a part of your life that maybe you just need to wait a little longer, or maybe it just was a part of your life that is not as important as you thought it was.
Yeah.
And once you miss it, I think you go like, no, I really do love that. So there is this kind of cathartic release where you're like.
And you just sort of like reevaluate what your purpose is for doing it. And like.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so I came back. I went. The next audition I did was an invite audition. I thought, well, I'm invited. I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the morning of the audition, an agent who I thought I was going to be freelancing with, she dropped me that morning.
That morning. Shit.
Yeah,
man.
I did a scene for her, and it
your
was like
life
a
is
done
about
deal.
Impeccable timing.
It was really, really incredible timing. Well, the point was, I wanted to have other stuff going on so that I didn't have all my eggs in the UCB basket.
Sure.
And that I had this person who literally, the way she dropped me was like sending me an email being like, I don't think you're a strong actor.
Whoa.
And
she wrote that to you?
Well, I could provide context. It wasn't cruel the way she did it. It was actually very honest, but she did not think I was good, which is good. Maybe she probably shouldn't have been my agent.
Sure.
But that was the same morning of my Lloyd audition. So by the time I just felt like I had been through the ringer, and I was like, well, whatever. And then I was placed on Huxtable.
That's really crazy.
It's so crazy. Yeah.
Were you, did you, so after you get that, I'm sure you're upset.
I cried. We can say it.
I cried.
I was a grown woman and I cried.
I'm a grown man. I still cry. It's totally cool. Not as much as I want to, though, and that's a weird thing.
Do you want to cry right now?
I'll try.
Let it out for 1 second. Take a deep breath.
I'm happy right now.
You're too happy.
Yeah, I'm too happy. Maybe I'm too. I'll try to get even more happy to cry.
Okay. Yeah.
But like, so you're. I don't know. Maybe there's just some like, when you get that, it's just like, fuck it. Did that happen in your head? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think so.
Because a lot of people would be like,
"Fuck it," is an energy that there are some improvisers and like students and whatever don't need to harness that "fuck it" energy because they're already like making big moves or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a whole group of improvisers like myself where I think that "fuck it" energy is we really need to get it.
Yeah.
We really need to get it.
There's some healthy.
There's something good about it. Yeah.
Right.
And I think because I was trying, you know, I was trying to do technically proficient improv.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to go back to the reason that I got into it in the first place, that's what it was addressing in my acting.
Mm-hmm.
My acting was missing that fucking energy
or
a looseness or a spontaneity.
Yeah,
something that was just like that energy of like being in that moment.
Yeah.
And so if I'm doing improv to address that in my acting, like I've definitely got to make sure that my improv has that spirit to it as well.
That's fantastic.
And there's a lot of us, I think, that need that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think UCB attracts people who are wonkish and who want to learn the technique. And I think the technique is so important, and that's why we teach classes and et cetera. But at some point, then we have to also just like really double down on.
Yeah, I think it's type A personalities. And I always say people are perfectionists. You know,
this
attracts so many perfectionist type A personalities that go, if I do X, Y, and Z, then I should get X.
Yeah.
You know, it should be like this. Yeah. I forgot what fucking transitive property. It's probably not that. But whatever the – it's like I put this in, you get this output, and that's it. And it's like it's not that. It's an art.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
So as much as we have a book and we have a training and we have all this stuff that will help you get better, there is a part of yourself that you have to bring to it that is that fuck it – attitude, which is like your voice, yeah, how you do things, how you're going to stand out. Like, you're not going to stand out if you do it correctly. You're going to stand out if you do it correctly in your voice.
Yeah. And
or not correctly.
To be clear, every art form is like that.
Every art
right?
form. Yep.
There's always rules and things you can study to get better at the mm-hmm. thing.
Painting.
And, yeah.
What other art forms?
I don't know. Painting, movies.
Sculpture.
Yeah, oh, book God. Writing.
Book writing. Book writing.
But you know, there's the way to improve is to study the technique, and then there's the artistic genius that mm-hmm. is something that I don't know how to teach and that you have to also release and yeah. let that be a thing. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, for acting and for improv, the technique is the thing that gets you by when you're having a shit show,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So the technique is the thing where it's like, well, we're not, you know, my scene partner and I are not totally on the same page, and that suggestion wasn't particularly glorious, and we're just doing the scene. Yeah. The technique is the thing that makes it function.
Mm-hmm.
It'll make it okay.
Right.
So that your shit show is just like, by the time you get quite good at technique, your shit show should be like fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not special. People
right.
might not go home and talk
right.
about it, but they're gonna laugh.
Yeah.
And like it
Forget
has
it.
A game probably, mm-hmm. and it's probably not the most interesting thing. At least it has pattern or whatever.
Right.
And the, you know, same goes for acting. It's like when you're doing 8 shows a week of something and you're like, oh, I fucking like don't want to go there tonight, but you have the technique to be like, well, at least I know
mm-hmm.
I can execute this moment and I can, you know, and the tears will come because I technically can make them come or whatever.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
That's fascinating. This is what I wanted to even jump in with you as well, was the acting side of it, because you have an acting background. And I really love the acting side of improv and the discovery with that. And I think it does. I think you summed up a lot of some of the stuff I was going to talk about. I was like, yeah, well, that makes a lot of sense, where it's like being able to do something technically. Do you have a certain approach now with improv that you've either learned or that you always kind of go in with? You seem more of a type A technical person, right? So what do you do to kind of, for those people out there, like, what do you do to say fuck it? Or is there anything that you do on stage where you're like, really like, no, you know what? My approach when I get in my head and I feel too technical is to do X or Y.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be anything special.
Yeah, I wish that what I could, I'm going to verge on like therapy if I start to answer that question. Because I think like, one thing I think is really important is bringing the joy on stage and the joy of performing. And so whatever, like what I do that is probably different from what other people would want to do to try to bring that joy on stage. But I'm fucking grateful to get up in front of the audiences that I get to get up in front of. And
mm-hmm.
that's Harold Knight, Maude Knight. Mm-hmm. Like,
so you focus on gratitude of this,
I guess,
of this scenario.
I mean, that sounds so... I sound a little basic now. I'm so blessed. But
not at all.
Seriously,
it fucking helps.
It when I'm going, you know, up on stage, I think about it. Like,
sure. These are things that are sometimes hard to communicate or more, you feel like you're revealing a part of yourself that's very you're vulnerable in this sense. I sometimes when I'm talking about stuff, you don't want to like totally say all your little inner stuff, but at the same time some of it is a very simple, like, I'm fucking grateful.
Well, whatever it is that brings joy, because what I don't,
that's
my
important thing,
natural inclination is to take the stage like I'm about to do work.
Right.
I'm to take the stage like I'm going to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that on Harold Knight. I mean, I think I came to the stage like, let me just execute what I'm supposed to do. I know what I'm doing. Grit your teeth.
Yeah.
And Maude, for sure, I've done that on Maude because it's such a harried schedule. And by the time you get there, you're like, do I know all my lines? I'm going to do this scene the way I rehearsed it. Like, I have to stop that. I have to consciously stop myself from addressing my work in that way.
Gotcha.
And take that breath of being like, oh, fuck it. I'm so lucky to be here. Let me just whatever, you know, do my best. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I did a little bit. Yeah.
That's another thing. Like,
you meditate.
All of it is going to be, it's like therapy stuff. But like.
Yeah. Spiritual stuff.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that those are the pieces that you have to start working on when you're in tandem with working on the technique stuff, which I also want to continue to work on and be better at.
Sure.
Yeah.
So your approach specifically, just to sum it up, is like coming from that type A kind of – I keep saying type A like it's a negative thing. It's what we –
It's my burden.
It's just – if you're a type A personality, like, you know, like, you're more of a perfectionist. And I think I would say more, I would say 80% of probably people that do this or that.
Yeah.
When you're coaching or teaching, right? A lot of, I would say a lot of, you get a couple of goofballs or a couple of loose people. I'm saying goofballs negative, but not like you get maybe a small number of like people that are just like, hey, fuck it, I'm here. Yeah. And a bunch of people like, wait a second, when this happens and this happens. And I love those. I love those questions because like, I'm thinking that I thought the same shit.
Yeah. Man. You love to have the wonkish students.
Yeah.
I will say that coming up in classes, I don't think, because I didn't see a future for myself in comedy, I don't think that I had a lot of that same like control and things in the classes.
Sure.
I think I addressed them as just like, I don't know. I was more laid back because I was just like, well, whatever. This isn't my thing. I'm not good at this.
Yeah.
So whatever happens.
And it worked for you.
And I think that, gradually I became more interested in like getting it right because I started to see like, oh, maybe I could have a future in this or maybe I could, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say something else about the approach.
We're getting talking about joy.
Yeah.
Meditation.
Oh, well, one thing that's interesting now playing, like, one thing that has started to change after, like, being on a house team for a little while is that now I do have a moment of considering who my audience is before. And I'm sure you've experienced this moving to the weekend.
Sure.
Because doing like those high school show, do you ever do those?
Uh-huh.
Those like high school matinee shows.
Yeah, they bring in high school like,
students
and stuff like that, and you do a show for them. Yeah, they bring in a couple schools at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like doing that and doing Herald Night or doing an indie show or doing Cage Match or DCM or et cetera. Right. Though I think I've started to think about, like, well, what is this audience looking for right now? Like, oh, this is an indie show. There's like, you know, 15 people here. What do they want? Something fucking high energy because they're just like,
something,
you know,
silly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does this high school look at? Or what is Herald Night? Herald Night, like, is the most amazing audience to perform for because they're just looking for game.
They're
looking
for like, they're like really happy to see like, it work.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. Or versus like, you know, I don't know. So I think that started to be some of a consideration now.
Because they always say, like, don't pander to your audience. But the more you do
I
this,
will
the more
– Yeah,
you
got to
do. You're totally fine. But it's also you want to know your audience in the sense of, like, what do they need right now? What is this show might need something to get that – you still need that connection.
Yes.
And the more you do this stuff, you know how to get that connection back.
Yes. And whatever, if you're thinking not to pander, that's fine. But everyone's performance is affected by the audience. So what I've seen happen is like going in and doing something really slow and patient in DCM is dumb. Like your audience is not going to respond.
Right.
And if you can't turn on a dime and like, so I think it's good to like prepare yourself for what is this audience going to be looking for in this moment? Because otherwise you'll be like, why didn't that feel satisfying? That was such a fun and patient scene. And I felt like we were really listening to each other. We found such a fun, specific thing. Like, because the audience doesn't give a shit. They were looking for, it's 2:30 in the morning and your set was 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like,
Gotcha. Yeah. That's very interesting. I also wanted to, not to change, but this kind of goes along the acting thing. You're also involved in a show called The Improvised Play, which was based on a Brandon Gardner class.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a 600 at the time, and now they're called Advanced Study Performance Classes.
Yeah.
And then that grew into its own thing for a couple of years, 2 years, something like that. Are you guys still doing stuff?
Honestly, it was longer than 2 years.
Can you give a bullet of what it was real quick? It's just like for people that don't know about the improvised play.
For people who don't know. Because there was also like Gardner taught an improvised play class more recently.
Recently,
than
ours. Yeah. You were in the first class?
I think this was the first one he ever did.
I think it was
did.
Too, yeah.
I think he was figuring it out. It was new at the time.
Right.
And I think it was like a 12-person class.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it was focused on was just like doing grounded scene work, having like the gravitas of doing something as though it were scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a typical ASP. We had, I think, 4 shows at Chelsea or something like that. And we all really liked working together and we thought, let's keep practicing. And what it eventually morphed into after the class was over, we decided, we thought, wouldn't it be cool to do like in the style of like improvised Shakespeare?
Right.
To do improv sets in the style of a great playwright. So mm-hmm. Tennessee Williams, Sam Shepard.
So that came after the class.
That was totally after the class. That
I
was,
didn't know that. I thought that was part of the class.
No, not at all. Huh. We thought that would be fun, and we
did
were
you do
all
this
nerds.
With Brandon?
No.
No, you did this independently.
This was all after. Yeah. Gotcha. I mean, he definitely got us started.
Sure.
That, you know, he put the group together. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we continued studying on our own after and thought it would be fun to do. And it was a wonderful experience. So mm-hmm. then we paid a ton of money and we rented out like a 6-month run at Soho Playhouse.
Soho Playhouse, yeah.
Where we did hour-long shows. And no one ever came.
That?
No one ever came. We lost all that money. We paid a publicist. Done. It was it was such a mess. It was so dumb. We were all like at the right point of being crazy enough to want to like do that. One good thing that came of it was that the owner of Soho Playhouse has a sister theater in Costa Rica. And he brought us down.
That's right. I remember hearing about this.
With like an all expense paid trip to Costa Rica to perform and like do workshops down there.
That's
which
awesome.
Was really, really fun. So we did that for a while, and then we had a run at the Pit, a monthly run at the Pit for a while where we were doing hour-long shows. I think like I loved, first of all, the people on that group.
Fantastic.
Oh, great, great team of people. And we did so much research. We like researched, we brought in a dialect coach. We brought in like a Pinter expert director to like work on us and work with us on Pinter scenes. And like it was just like what it was doing was like scratching that itch of still being in class, really. Mm-hmm. Of like getting to work on a new skill set.
Yeah.
And
workshop something with a group of people. It's in the creation mode and learn mode.
Yeah.
When you're learning with other people that you respect, you're kind of in the trenches with them.
Yeah.
And you love and respect each other even more because you see how everyone works and you're going through this thing together. So when you come out of it, you're even more I'm guessing you guys are closer.
Yeah, I think we were close as a team. We also one of the hardest things to do in improv is to get narrative while you're also doing game,
right?
To be able to do a narrative show that has game throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a good, like, advanced level challenge for us all at the time to be working on.
Did it work? Like, did it work most of the time? Or was it more 50-50? Or you're like, you know what? It didn't really work, but God damn, it was a good experience. It was a good shot.
I think it was a little more hit and miss toward the beginning. But I would say by the time we got to the end.
After all that workshopping and all that
I
stuff.
I think we really started to get a sense of. And what we did was we shifted the form. And so we would always do hour-long shows, which that is, I would say, like, to students out there, I don't know how you find an opportunity to do an hour-long show except paying $1,000 to rent out Soho Playhouse for 6 months. I don't know how you get that opportunity, but that is a luxury that helps you become a more patient improviser and also a little bit more of, like, a baller swagger improviser because you know you can fill that time and you don't feel rushed to, I think, 99% of the not so great moves that improvisers make are due to panic because they don't fucking trust themselves just to like stand. And I'm guilty of it, but
me too.
We don't trust ourselves to stand on stage in a moment of silence
or
just to make something simple be the thing that we want to do. We just don't always have that trust. And I don't know how you get that confidence other than like, you know, reps and stage experience and stuff like that.
Sure.
But having an hour long show and you're like, I can fill an hour and it's going to be fine is like such a great. That's like a formative part of the experience right there. But we would shift shift what we would do based on the playwright. So we would do 3 mono scenes for Chekhov.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were doing like act 1, act 2, act 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we treated them, you know, we would treat that differently than we would do, I'm trying to think what our other.
Tennessee Williams,
we tended to do a few more 2-person scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Pinter was almost always 2-person scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we like, and we would vary the length based on what we were.
Did you do more modern Sam Shepard?
We did Shepard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Shepard, we had some really good Shepard shows, but generally speaking, We could do them when we had smaller casts. Gotcha. Williams, we would do with a larger cast. Chekhov definitely worked with a larger cast.
Sure. Mammoth, did you dive into that stuff? That's probably better smaller cast, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but we did some with bigger casts that were that ended up being fun. But yeah.
This is real nerdy right now. I like this.
Oh, it was real. Well, think about, like, so it's... It's you're balancing a bunch of different. Obviously, whenever you're doing improv, you're balancing a bunch of different things. But on top of whatever else you're balancing, like justification and game and all the stuff that we learn, you're also you have a tone. You have a show-wide tone and genre.
You have a genre
that you're doing where there are specifics that are appropriate. You might be in a time period where there are specific, or like if you're doing Pinter, there's like a whole either you're doing English, you know, dialects and British dialects. So you're balancing all of that on top of also trying to balance a fulfilling narrative in the style that the playwright would do it.
Yeah, it's a tall order.
Yeah.
For an hour.
Like, playwrights have a lot of tropes. Yeah, for an hour.
Yeah.
But it was a whole team of nerds, so...
Well, everyone committed to it. I wish more people did that. Like, I know we're speaking, you're like, oh, yeah, we paid a lot of money to do this thing that no one came to in this sense, but it was like one...
We never found our audience.
We never found your audience, but I was like, I wish more people took those chances to do that with improv, because I don't want people to listen to this and go like, well, they did that, and it can't fucking work. It's just like, hopefully...
Yeah, let this
things...
be a lesson to you. Yeah. Save your money. Don't do it. It never works.
No, I want more people to do that shit to, like, go,
but
like...
people might be doing it.
Yeah, yeah, to, like, put something together that they're like, yeah, we're doing... I think genre general helps with game. Like, when I was in the movie class and I learned genre, that helped my game play out. So everything started making more sense and stuff like that.
Eventually, what you want is for your gameplay to be... second nature. Your gameplay. So what I tell my students is, like, you want your yes anding to be second nature. Yes anding is the heartbeat that exists throughout your scene no matter what. It's involuntary.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening while you're thinking about, like, what could my game move be? What is the justification for this behavior, et cetera. Right. Your yes and is your heartbeat. Eventually, you want game to be your heartbeat. Eventually, you default to game. Mm-hmm. That you can find no problem. And then on top of that, you're working on, you know, what's the theme of this? What's the show-wide overarching, you know, pattern or whatever?
Gotcha.
What's the genre?
Right.
Whatever.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow. It felt like it flew by. I think we're...
Are we done?
Yeah, I think we're pretty much done.
Okay, let me just sum this up. Don't pay for a publicist.
No.
To publicize your indie show.
Hey, you know you have every right. This is you're the guest. You're giving the advice. Do it up.
No, I'm for real. I don't know. I don't have any thoughts to sum it up.
That was great, though. I think we touched on a lot of different stuff. I think hopefully people listening to this, you had a great journey. I'm always interested in people, like, I think timing happened with you is sometimes it was kind of a blessing in disguise, it seems like, you know, things happening and then you having to kind of suck it up and do something else, or learning how to just say fuck it, I think was probably like a big part of your journey.
Yeah, and I think that we're not in control of the timing stuff, like it just like happens or whatever.
Yeah.
We're not in control of so much.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say, like, that it would be right for to just keep plugging along and keep forcing, like, keep work. You know, it's not right for everybody to do that. For me, I lucked out and, like, I did. And then I, you know, the timing did eventually work out. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's it.
Yay!
Thank you very much. You're going to be here.
I'm going to. You're hosted next.
Yeah, that was
your job.
Yeah, that was it. That was this long form conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in next time. Carrie will be the interviewer. It'll be her show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Don Finelli. You'll never hear from me again.
Bye.
I am out of here. It's not
happening.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's RIP. But thank you so much for tuning in. I'm sure there's places you can go and to see this podcast that you say. I'm not going to come up with that shit.
What? You're going to give them a link?
Yeah, but it's not a front. I don't know what the fucking link is,
okay.
But, you know.
UCB.gov.
UCB.podcast.org.
That long form.
Longformpodcast.org.
Okay.
But thank you very much, everyone. We made up something. Hear you later.
Oh, hear you later.
Hear you later.
There you go.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy. This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.